Welcome to the all-new VM Podcast. This is where we discuss the latest and most fascinating, powerful, and disruptive additive manufacturing and 3D printing technologies with the people that invent, develop, use, and market them. Join us on this journey as we take you from voxels to matter through the most advanced applications across aerospace, automotive, healthcare, consumer products, and the most advanced areas of digital production. I am your host, Davide Scher, CEO and co-founder of Voxel Matters, the most trusted media, marketing, and market research firm for the ever-growing world of additive manufacturing. Welcome to a new episode of the VM Podcast. In this episode, we will discuss two of the biggest additive manufacturing-related announcements coming from the Paris Air Show. With these two major and highly strategic announcements, Oerlikon is consolidating its leadership in advancing metal AM part production for aero and space applications. The company revealed it worked with Airbus to industrialize the AM process for serial production of antenna clusters, which resulted in a €3.8 million contract to additively manufacture these satellite components. In addition, Oerlikon AM and Ariane Group signed a 900,000 order for the production of 3D printed sets of heat exchangers for the upcoming Ariane 6 rocket launcher. Oerlikon is investing millions of dollars in developing a strong metal AM service offer that can cater to the extreme requirements of companies such as Airbus and Ariane Group, even for the most safety critical parts. Executive Chairman Dr. Michael Suess and CTO of Surface Solutions, Van Hicken, are with us today to discuss the present and future implications of these deals for Oerlikon and for the entire AM industry. So let's start with the big announcements for the Paris Air Show. And what I'm wondering, you're the only company that made big, very clear announcements in additive. Do you think you're taking up kind of a leadership in aerospace additive manufacturing, or do you think there are a lot of other companies that are really specialized service companies that are also doing what you're doing?
Yeah, thanks for the question. For sure, we are not the only ones, but we are very proud that we have the opportunity to now communicate those deals, those projects we have together with Ariane and Airbus. And we see ourselves as leaders in surface engineering and materials. This is our legacy and coating. We have to have a good understanding of surfaces. And we see ourselves on a way to become a major aerospace prime for the component surface. We have been discussing with the whole AM ecosystem since 2016. So these deals are not a surprise to us, which came overnight. We spent the last 7 years to build up that knowledge.
Yes.
So yes, we are on a good way. We are happy that we could communicate it. Are we the only ones? No. Do we love competition? Yes.
Fantastic. And so do you think it's really all of aerospace, or do you think the space segment is particularly strategic for you? Because both of the big announcements were very much on space manufacturing. Of course, there is a lot more serial production for space manufacturing now, but do you think this segment is even more strategic than aviation, for example?
I won't call it necessarily more strategic, but you're right, there are differences when we compare the aerospace with the space piece. And the big differences is, let's look at it from a commercial perspective. The space applications, the space companies introducing AM, the weight of a component is much more value. The reduced weight is much more of value for a space company than it is for an aerospace.
Sure.
For aerospace, it's also important, but for the space customers, there is a one-to-one relation to what they could sell as a payload to their customers. So they are very interested to low weight of the components. And strategic pillars for us, space, yes. We do continue to work on aerospace applications. We also learned, like others, that the whole way of getting certification of parts needs a longer time compared to the time we do have in space. Hi, Michael.
Hello, welcome.
Hi. Sorry, a little late.
Not a problem. We went over a couple already, but the next one I think is a great fit for you because I wanted to ask you, so we talked with Sven about how strategic the space segment is in particular for your additive manufacturing activities. And of course, this all started with the announcements that you made at the Paris Air Show. So I wanted to ask you, how important is this show for you? Why did you decide this setting to make these announcements? And is the Paris Air Show really the reference event for your space-related activities in additive manufacturing?
So, first and above all, Paris is the air show in the world. It's not Farnborough, it's not Berlin, ILA, it's Paris.
Yeah.
So every 2 years we have the aero and the space people together there, and for sure to have an announcement two times, with Airbus on the satellites and then with Arianespace. Even maybe the size, 1 million with Ariane and 4 million with Airbus, is not super big, but it's purely AM and it's space. And this is exactly describing a little bit the dilemma. I do believe that space is one of the areas where AM will play a massive role, simply because of the key elements, integration of functionality, weight reduction, and design capabilities. And you can design things which you typically cannot design in a classical way. That's the positive side. And there is not this much look on costs. As long as you can reduce weight, as you can improve in functionality, they pay for. I would say the caveat, the negative part is that it takes very long to verify yourself and your procedures. The RF antenna, we're working, spent 3 years on. We've been ready already a year and a half ago. But then it took a while from Airbus even to make the announcement. So we had the approval, everything done. But then it was Airbus always still waiting and when it was the right timing. And then we have sometimes customers, we have wonderful projects, but we cannot talk about.
Of course. So,
and then to make these announcements in Paris for sure gives you the best reference and the best visibility.
Absolutely. And I have a more technical question. So just to go over, what you think are the most suitable additive manufacturing technologies and materials for space today, and how do you think this will change in the near and medium term future in terms of materials and technologies?
Maybe on materials when you are deeper in than I am.
Right.
you're simply closer. I would, out of the box, I would say, it's still Inco, but Sven, maybe you have a much better view on that, what the material side is.
Now, on the technologies, maybe first, Davide, powder bed fusion is still the most prominent technology in the area of additive manufacturing. And they are developing as well. We see these multi-laser systems, but with multi-lasers come complexity. So there is still ongoing development for powder bed fusion. What we engaged more and more over the last, I would say, 2 years is on the direct energy deposition. Because this for us is a perfect opportunity when we have to have more volume, more material per time. And as Michael said, we are unfortunately not allowed to talk about all of our projects.
Of course.
But I can give an outlook that we are working on really big parts in the space area. And interesting for us, we'll combine those parts with conventional powder bed fusion. The bigger the bond material is direct energy deposition. And for the more fine, detailed parts, we use powder bed. And on material, Michael is perfectly right. We don't see a completely new class of materials for additive showing up. Why is that? Also, the customers have to have a certain understanding of the material they are not as open to go for something completely new, but it will take a lot of effort on their side to do all the certification, all the testing. So the moment we stick to the usual suspects, nickel ones, titanium ones, aluminum ones, majority of our customers feels very comfortable to play in that area. Michael, you know better than me that also for turbines, the change to a completely new material has some challenges, isn't it?
That's definitely the case, and here we have as well to differentiate. First, when we talk aerospace, we do it very often simply in one word, space and its aero. So there's aero technology and space technology. The commercial space is very conservative. They don't want to take risk. They're sending up a satellite, which is a half a billion or a billion, even more. So you don't put something at risk because of one or two parts. That's why the verification process, the validation is a long running. As soon as you are validated, as we are now, then it makes it easier. But then the last thing you want to do is to play around with new composed powders.
Sure.
Then you stay as long as you can with an Inco or with aluminum. Typically in a turbine sector, it's mainly Inco. Titanium is always a big question mark. You try to avoid titanium where you can. First, because of sources. There are not too much titanium sources in the Western world. I think actually we get a lot from Japan instead of from Russia or China. And second, titanium is not an easy material. You avoid what you can avoid. What is the purpose in space? Weight reduction, function integration.
Sure.
Because if you can integrate functions, you can avoid, the merge of different parts by welding or gluing or whatever, which per se is a risk in space. Wherever you have one part who is carrying more functionality, it's better. And when you have parts 1 or 2 kilos off, it's simply one-on-one calculated in the launcher size or more functionality on the satellite. This is the commercial view. When we look for additive applications in commercial aero engines, you need a window when you have a big upgrade, a big modification, where they have any way to go through some test procedures, because you typically, the blade off, the bird tests, the stalling tests, all that stuff, it's very expensive. And you don't do that because you bring 2 or 3 new additive parts. The biggest opportunity in my eyes on that level is the next generation narrow body, where no one of us knows when they will launch it, but I'm pretty sure there will be a narrow body launch within this decade.
Okay.
Because the 320 family of Airbus and the 737 of Boeing, they're both 50 years old. So they collect money now, and then definitely who moves first? And probably it will be Boeing. By a simple calculation, the Boeing has the problem that the space below their wing is massively limited. You have seen it with the LEAP engine and the whole LEAP problem. The Airbus has much more space. They can wait another 10 years, but as soon as Boeing is moving, they have to. I think they will study the next 3, 4, 5 years, and somewhere between 2026, 2027, and 2030, we will see a new launch. What does that mean? We have to prepare on the commercial side, our additive story, to be in the design. When they start thinking, we have to be part of that thought process. That's the biggest opportunity on the commercial side.
In light of all this, I had a few questions on market data. I wanted you to help me understand the scale of your business today and where you expect it will go in the future.
When you talk with people, you always hear about Oerlikon here or there, or we're playing this or we're playing that. Why? Because we do application engineering, we do the post-processing, we do the operations. We don't build printers, which is a benefit, because we can choose, even if it's sometimes from an operational standpoint, a burden if you have different printers running to get with the right amount of printers to get the right support of maintenance from your suppliers. But on the other hand, there is not the one fits all printer out there. And here we have a real benefit, which we still have to further develop. This is the benefit that we have maybe 60, 70 years experience in materials, that we know how to work with powders,
yeah,
that we know how to organize a setup and we have the expertise in-house. Still not big enough, because the AM industry is not an industry. There is not too much people. There are a lot of good R&D people, and there are not too much good operational people. This we have to create by ourselves. And that's why the industry takes, I would say, longer than expected to become a real industry. But here the positive again is, if you talk with people out of the aerospace, out of this aero sector, they all will confirm you that the designs of the future have the requirement of a certain percentage of AM parts to meet future specifications. And that's our strength. If you take a typical engine program, you make 7-8 years, you spend money, then you make some money. Then after 14-15 years, you're neutral again, and then you start making money. I don't think that the process in AM will be that long. We have started since 2017, then you have to deduct COVID. So for that period of, say, 3 or 4 years, we are pretty good.
And by the way, I just wanted to say, it takes a long time for certifications, but we saw what happened when you don't take enough time for certifications with the Titan incident.
And there was not even a TÜV certification, nothing. And I'm wondering how people can enter such a boat going 4 kilometers deep in sea if there's no certification on.
Incredible, incredible. So I have a few more questions specifically on the deals that you announced. The first one is to look a little bit closer at the Airbus deal, which was actually pretty big. And my question is this the biggest one, the biggest order so far for Alicon's AM business? And do you think this is an indication of bigger things to come?
Now we have bigger deals, which we cannot confirm, but it's not the biggest.
Okay.
So there are bigger deals, by the way, outside the aerospace sector.
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely a leading sector. There is other sectors, as you said. I think we are on the edge to get more deals in the dimension of millions and not of hundred thousands. There's still a lot of hundred thousands around.
Sure, we need that.
But there are more million deals to come. And so we maybe be going from very small and narrow amount of parts to mid-sized dimension, not mass production, but mid-sized dimension, having some thousand parts a year somehow. This is something which is not far future.
My perspective, just to build on Michael's statement, David, for me, yes, of course, the total amount of orders is a good indicator. It's important to build our business. For me, what was very exciting about the Airbus project is for us learning from Airbus their requirements about their way of certifying us as a supplier. This was a very valuable experience, which allows us now to continue business with Airbus, as well as having Airbus as a reference customer, which gives other customers good confidence.
And with that, you did answer my next question, and which was about the challenges of working with a company like Airbus. And also, I wanted to really focus a little bit on why did they want additive manufacturing and why did they want your process for additive manufacturing?
From my perspective, the setup of our business, starting with the powder, we are producing additive materials by ourselves. So they can rely, we are not just buying powders, we know how to produce it, we have all the measures, all the controls in place to really secure quality of our powders. It's a very important material input factor for the final part. Second thing Michael mentioned before, we are machine agnostic. When customers approach us, we'll have a thorough discussion, what is the best machine which fits to their requirements? And this is also appreciated from customer perspective.
And Sven, last but not least, but very important in my eyes, we are a company which is big enough to rely on over a long period. So typically you have either big corporations already working on AM, but then there will not be a supplier to Airbus. So BMW, for example, or Audi in the automotive sector, or Boeing, or whoever is doing that, they will not supply Airbus. And then if you look on the really leading AM companies, they're small, very often private kept, or coming
right
out of startups. They have not the financial power, they have not the engineering power. We are a proven player for decades. On our other activities we have with these companies, with the coatings, that we are very reliable, very precise, and typically Swiss, that we are not doing cowboy engineering. But when we do something, it's reliable, and we even say, if we cannot achieve, we cannot achieve.
Fantastic. And let's move on, because I don't know how much time we have left. And the last part of the interview is, of course, on the other deal, which is smaller, but is very fascinating because, of course, Ariane 6 is going to be the next launcher. And I was just reading just before you made, just as you made the announcement, that they also are proceeding with the next gen launcher with the Prometheus. And they said specifically that they're going to be using a lot of additive manufacturing to make that cost effective. So it's, of course, it's super interesting. So you make heat exchangers for this rocket. Can you tell me a little bit more about the characteristics of these parts?
These type of applications perfectly fit to what have we discussed before, which Michael explained as the combination lightweight and extended superior functionality. The heat exchanger overall as a product family is very much of interest. Why space? Yes, they are willing to pay for weight more than other industries. And we have discussed so far a lot about the satellites, and you are right with the Ariane. This is now the launches. Yeah, and launches is also very much of interest. Ariane, very well known experienced player again, learning opportunity for us.
And satellite spaces, for us, it's a reference in two dimensions. Do heat exchangers for Ariane space. We will do heat exchangers for commercial others as well in future.
I see, yeah.
We have the highest reputation and the best reference you can get, because Ariane is one of the top launcher systems. It's sometimes a question if it's cost effective enough, but definitely from a design and technology standpoint, it's leading edge. So that gives us reference in future as well to NASA, as well to all the American who is operating. And by the way, it's a matter of fact that heat or overheated systems, by getting to the top levels in all kind of applications, and it's better we can qualify one application meets heat exchanger systems by space. Scale it or applicate them in different use cases.
Sure, of course.
So this is another top reference, because you have in fighter programs, you have heat exchangers, you have in tanks heat exchangers. I do remember when we had an MTU years ago, 20 years ago, a program for the M1 Abrams heat exchanger system. So in all cases, heat is an issue when you run for more performance and you need heat exchangers to work on this heat.
A small comment, the heat exchangers in the launches, it's really a great pleasure to see our engineers talking through the design engineers of the launches, because they really can't believe what kind of design we can create by using additive. That allows them so much better cooling of certain components, which give them a competitive advantage. This is definitely a field to play in for us.
I can imagine. And it is a really fascinating project. There was a mention in the press release about being a class 1, class 2, and class 3 supplier. What does that mean exactly?
In general, these class 1 to 3 indicates the level of criticality of the part for the overall function. So in aerospace, if you have a class 1 part, it's the most flight safety critical part, which never should fail at all.
Result, failure in class 1 is losing the aircraft or the vehicle.
I see.
So class 2 is with some counteractions, you can still stabilize and rescue the system. Class 3, if it fails, it's not a life-threatening. For example, a blade in a jet engine is a class 1 part. If you have some, let's say, ceilings, they may be class 2 or class 3, because if the ceiling doesn't work, maybe you lose some efficiency, some power, but it doesn't stop the aircraft. In aero, even worse, commercial aero than in space, because in space, in the worst case, you lose a satellite. In a commercial aircraft, you lose an aircraft. You have 100, 200, 300 victims, and you don't want to be guilty for that.
Exactly. And so the last thing, without maybe unveiling trade secrets and on what you're future plans are, but what kind of parts do you think Icon will be producing in the future for the space industry? Will it be more of these parts that we saw, more heat exchangers, more antennas? Are there other things that you can indicate as ideal candidates for production?
To be honest, David, and it's the pleasure of journalism, let's do it that way. The parts, there will be more of the same.
That's good, that's good.
And there are new applications in the pipeline we cannot talk about.
Sounds good. And I think this is plenty. It was a great conversation. We have a lot of themes to go over.
Perfect, David. Perfect.
Sounds very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Take care.